Welcome back to Mad Props. We are back and we have a guest again. We've had some good success with the solo episodes, but today we have comedian Slade Ham joining us as he gets ready for his new YouTube special, comedy special on April 2nd. So next Tuesday, I had to think about that for a second, his new special will be coming out. So he's here to kind of promote that. And we also have some good conversation and stuff like that. Slade is a Houston comedian. He also has a podcast called The Whiskey Brothers that you can go check out. Big Marvel guy, big Star Wars guy, which, you know, right up my alley. Has his own YouTube channel where he does different things in different countries that he performs in. Has a book called Until All the Dragons Are Dead that you can go check out. So all of this stuff that you could check out from Slade Ham, I definitely recommend doing that if you haven't already. He is very funny. I watched his special. I got one of the first screeners, which was nice. And I'm telling you right now, he is a funny dude. The first thing, so we just met before this interview. Like, we've talked back and forth, but we just met to talk before this interview. And I'm telling you right now, the first thing I said to him is, dude, you are funny. Like, I really enjoy your stuff, man. You're really funny. And it went great from there. So definitely worth checking out. We had some really good stuff. We talked a lot about IPs. We talked about his comedy special. We talked about Star Wars. We talked about all this different stuff. It went all over, not all over the place. It went, you know, nice and smooth, but we talked about a lot of different fun things. You can check all that stuff out in the description if you really want to get an idea of what went on before that. Before we start anything, though, make sure you follow us on social media at Mad Props Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Or Schnabel Studios on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, and LinkedIn. You can find all of our stuff there. We've been sharing a lot more stuff on Schnabel Studios of production-wise, so you can check out some of our videos there. Or you can just follow us on social media and see clips from the shows or just want to reach out to us. That's the best place to do it. On there as well. Before we get started, I do want to go back to last week's episode really quick. So last week we did a really short episode. I was traveling. I was in Buffalo. And I did like a couple of stories of interactions we recently had. And so I wanted to give an update on the Tyreek Hill thing. So if you didn't listen last week, my girlfriend went to the gym in Dallas, Texas, just a like random community gym. And Tyreek Hill was at this gym. And I told the whole story there. So definitely go back. You can look up at the top. We'll have it linked. You can go back and listen there. But I wanted to give an update. So we went back to the gym and I was there this time and we were talking to the person at the front desk. And I guess he went to that specific gym because they have a bunch of soccer fields surrounding and he's looking to do a tournament. The only reason I wanted to bring all that up is because I was talking about how random it is and why was he at this gym and it doesn't make any sense and all this stuff. This is why he's at that gym. It's because he's looking to do a soccer tournament. I still have not figured out if he's from Florida, if he's from Texas, but I should probably look into that because I actually don't know. But anyway, that is why. So if you were wondering why was he there, it's because he's looking to use the fields that surround this gym. I will not say the name of the gym, but it's in Dallas. It's not hard to figure out which gym it is, but Tyreek Hill was there and that was good. We've been doing really good. I've been having a good time with this podcast. I've been very excited about the reception to the solo episode. So putting those in between, making this a weekly is definitely something we're going to do, but I have some guests lined up finally, and it's really good to have this. First one will be Slade Ham. It'll be this one right here. He is a comedian from Houston, Texas. Like I said in the beginning, has a new special coming out April 2nd. It is so freaking funny. Like, I don't want to give a lot away of it, but everything goes together really well in this special, and all the stories connect in some sort of way, which is like amazing as well. And I think my favorite part is, like, you can listen to it. Like, so I listened to some of it while I was working and I watched some of it when I had some time, and like, you can, the expressions, the motions, the stance he is, the way he carries himself while doing these jokes, like, adds to the humor of the joke. Like, the facial expressions will add to the humor of the joke, but it doesn't make the joke. So like, some people, like, that kind of makes the joke is like they're very physical, right? Like, you have to be watching them or you're not going to get it. Like, for him, like, you can listen or you can watch and you'll still find a lot of humor in the situations. And the story's really funny. We're going to talk about some of those. We're going to talk about a lot more. Let's get right into it. Let's not make this a long intro because I really want to get into this interview. It's a nice, long, juicy one. So let's get right into it. You are here and you are watching Mad Props. Let's go.
I'm Slade Ham. Let's start the show.
Slade Ham, thank you for joining us. Thank you for being here. Thank you for talking with us and all of that. How you doing? How's it going?
Fantastic, man. It's good to be here. It's good to be here.
It's funny because we were talking about you coming on and stuff like that, and I saw you were in Houston when you sent your bio over, and I'm in Dallas, and we're talking like, oh, let's do this central time. Like, what about this? And like the whole time we could just said, yeah, let's do this time because we're in the same time zone.
Texas is like six different states inside of its own country, inside of America somehow. We live in our own little pocket. It's weird.
That's what they want to be, right? That's what the whole thing is.
Texas I laugh at the secession. We should secede. That's the most hysterical. I want it to happen just so I can watch it. I'll move over to Louisiana and eat crawfish while it happens. But the
it's some stuff that's being passed. You're thinking like they just passed that law that you need to like show your age and identification to go on Pornhub. And it's like,
man,
Pornhub does not allow you on now if you're in Texas.
And they shut down a few other other sites that would be options also, I've learned.
So you can't even go to your secondary.
This whole state is, I mean, I've lived here my entire life. It's like living in the circus. And I no longer have any opinion of it. I'm just a spectator who, oh, cool. What fresh hell today?
So I just moved in January to Texas, so I'm not from here or I can't even tell you about all that. So
that's not a southern accent I hear.
No, it's not a southern accent. It's not a southern accent at all, but not yet, at least. Maybe soon when I get more time down here, it'll start transferring over.
Are you a New Yorker who says son all the time? What's going on, son? Hey son, well, let me talk to you about the Yankees, son. You good, son? Come here, son.
People laugh because I use a lot of the New York terms like all the time. Like you good. I use you good constantly. And someone sent me a video recently, like a reel, and it was like New York using you good. It's like, well, how do you say like, are you okay? You good? How do you say like, what just happened? You good? It's like, you good is just the only language you need to know. And I do it all the time. So of course people send that to me like, hey, that's you.
Do you confuse people down here when you tell them you're going to the bodega and they go, what? And you, never mind. I'll be back.
So I when I first went to college, I lived in Gainesville. So some of the terms in the South, I'm like, okay with. And one of my closest friends is from Atlanta, Georgia. So I definitely get all the terms from Kyle. And I learn a lot from him. I learn a lot from him. He'll say something like, what did you just say? Like, what?
We have our own vernacular down here. We say fixin' to a lot. That's a big one. I'm fixing to go to the store. I'm fixing to cook dinner. I'm fixing to fix me something to eat. It's like, how many fixins? There's a lot of fixins.
Yeah. See, you have your own language. And I feel like in New York, we kind of shorten things. Like instead of saying about, you just say bout. Like I'm about to go there. I'm about to bounce. I'm about to hit the store.
Like, we're all idiots. We all talk in our own dumb languages.
Get rid of what? Chewant. Chewant.
Chewant. Now I'm talking about. That's a know what I'm not talking about? That's, yeah, know what I'm talking about?
Not mean?
That is one of my favorite. There was an album called Distant Relatives by Damian Marley and Nas. And Nas is a New York rapper, right? And the name of the track is Na Mean. And Na I love mean. It. It's very aggressive. Oh, you got me.
Well, it's Nas. I'm not surprised.
But it's Nas doing an entire record with Damian Marley. So it's got this entire reggae hip hop vibe. And when I saw him tour on that album, and they did it all there were, I think, eight musicians on stage. It was one of the most incredible things because it wasn't just backing tracks. They put on a show.
Yeah. I bet. I mean, I've never, unfortunately, I've never seen Nas. Yeah, I got you. I've never seen Nas. I'm a big hip hop guy. I love Nas. The one time I would have seen him was I went to Eminem and Jay-Z at Yankee Stadium back in 2009 or something like that. And they had everyone there. It was basically a music festival. Like yeah. Everyone was there except for T.I., Lil Wayne, Nas. And apparently it's because they were all in prison at the time.
I was going to say, that's the only thing Lil Wayne wasn't on in 2009.
Yeah. I mean, this dude was recording rap albums from a phone in prison. Like, this dude was on it. Yeah, but he wasn't there, which was unfortunate because they did the song Forever with everyone but Lil Wayne. Like, Eminem, Kanye, and Drake were all there, but Lil Wayne had to be in prison.
I think he was busy making a rock album. In that stretch,
Lord.
That's when he put out Rebirth. I think that's the name of it.
Yeah, it is.
And
he did track.
There's a track on there with Eminem, I think, called "Drop the World." But how
drop
do I know
world.
This about?
Pick the world up, and I'ma drop it on his fucking head.
Yeah, that album was so good. And he did a track with Fallout Boy.
Was that no? Was that the Rebirth album that he did? Yeah, that was Rebirth.
I think that's the name of it.
Rock album. And then there's some other songs on there. I think Prom
the whole
Night's
thing's
on
incredible.
There and the Knockout with Nicki Minaj. Yeah, I know that album. Yep. That's like right in my wheelhouse of music right there. That's high school.
Yeah, that was right after he got out of prison or right before. It was somewhere in there, but that might explain
it.
It must have
been right before because that album was already out because Eminem also dropped Recovery that year. And that's why he was on that tour with Jay-Z, who dropped the Blueprint 3 that year. So
what a wild, there was an entire era that has disappeared for me. Not just maybe for me, but where when I was growing up listening to music, I was in radio, I was listening to all the new stuff all the time, and my collection was on CDs. And now everything is on Spotify and easily accessible via playlist. I don't really own it, but it's always accessible. But everything between 2006, 7, 8, and maybe 2012, there's like a gap where I bought it all on iTunes and it just disappeared.
It's gone.
Forever. It's gone. I don't have access to the playlists, the bands, the people. If I could get an electrical current into my iPod, I've got an iPod like 164 gig or something thing that I've just got to figure out how to take it and interface it with 2024 in a way that I can see what's on it. And then at least I can look at the bands and go, I forgot that these guys were a thing for like 4 years.
Doesn't it seem like that's a lawsuit coming that we all purchased all this stuff from iTunes and then it's just gone? Like, do we get refunded on this? Like,
it should be, but let's put you and me up against whatever legalese was in the I accept pop-up that you and I clicked a billion times with every purchase. And I promise you somewhere buried in there.
I read every single one of those.
They say, we have the right to spontaneously combust your purchase on call at will and give you nothing in return because we're Apple. And we can't do anything about it.
Well, there's a whole South Park episode about that. So,
oh, is there?
You don't read the terms and conditions?
Yeah, that's exactly. There's no telling. If we sue, they'll probably go, all right, well, now we want what you said you'd give us in that contract. And then we all have to pull our souls out somehow and stick them in a jar and mail them to Cupertino or wherever they're.
You said here that if you ever sued that you work for us for free for
Absolutely.
10 years. It says it right there. Fine print.
Okay. I guess I'll put my left foot on ice and send it in.
As long as I get my money back.
Yeah. As long as I get that collective soul album I spent 99 cents on in 2006.
You might remember this. This was probably around 2012-ish. When we all had iPhones, it was in its birth, and U2 put their entire album on everyone's
forcefully
phone.
Forcefully Stuck. Was that Atomic?
I don't remember the name of it. I remember going off on the radio.
Showed up.
Just showed up one day.
Just sort of unpermissibly. You know what I mean? If you did that with anything that wasn't music, you'd be in jail for 30 years. That's the...
Yeah.
You can't... It's worse than a busker you walk by. You know what? It's worse than a guy playing bad music on the corner where you're like, he's doing it in public. You're like, yeah, but you chose to go to the corner. I didn't even leave the house. And I was on BlackBerry at the time, I think, or I had just gone to Android. I was an iPhone. I'm still not, but I wasn't one of the early adopters of that. So when everybody was kind of screaming and yelling about this Forced U2 album, I might have even accidentally bought it because I like U2. Like, there was a part of me that was, I'm out here, I'm like, am I the only guy who gave them $10? You just gave it to everyone?
Then you're like, what the hell? This is, so I actually wanted the album.
That $9 back too, Apple.
Yeah, or U2, whoever I need to talk
whoever,
to.
Whoever has it.
U2. I need that album back. But I remember that happening, and I just went off. I was on college radio at the time. Like, I don't want this shit on my phone. Just take it up memory. I'm you not going to listen to it.
Here's what's messed up. If you think about that, right? Whenever that came in, I don't know if it was 10 a.m. that they dropped it or when who knows? But somebody somewhere only had 25 megs left on their phone. Like, that was it. That's all they had. And they were at their father's funeral, and they were capturing the eulogy forever and ever. Maybe they're on a Zoom call so that their mother, who's on life support, can see the funeral. An insignificant space, and it just cuts you off, and your dad has to die without your mom seeing it. And you, damn you, Apple.
Damn you, Bono.
I want my $9.
You pulled one over on me again.
You self-important activist.
Well, the worst part about it at first was you couldn't take it off either.
No.
Like, you had it on and you couldn't get it off your phone.
Bono's forced. I bet if I lived in Darfur, you wouldn't put that on my phone against my will. I worked at a blood mine.
I'm surprised they didn't put it on and then 2 days later take it off. Like, now you have to buy the whole thing. Right, we gave it to you for free. I'm
surprised they didn't put the first 30 seconds of each track on your phone.
They would know nobody would get it. You put this 30 seconds on my phone. But yeah, that's Bono for you doing that stuff. So you're a big music guy. I know you like 90s music. Like, what are some of your favorite bands, some of your favorite artists?
I grew up like I still go back to the 90s stuff, and I don't follow most of the 90s artists out of the 90s. I know a lot of people are like, I like to grow with my artists. And I like about two Pearl Jam albums, and the rest can go to hell. I don't think we're supposed to grow with our artists, right? It's kind of like the same way you grow, like you and your best friend from like grade school aren't best friends now. And if you are, you're a little bit different because it's just, we change as people. And some of the angsty stuff I listened to when I was young that helped me with my creativity, or some of the stuff I was dealing, it had like an emotional purpose. And I listened to that, but where everybody went after that, I don't. So a lot of that 90s stuff, now I'll still go back and revisit like old Nine Inch Nails stuff or old Pearl Jam stuff, or just I'll pop on like a best of 1997 rock and just let it spin. And you're like, oh, I forgot Gigi Ta was a band. Like, you don't even, these one hit wonders that pop up. And what's cool about it, it brings up that moment of my life for me. It's very specific, right? Like the mid 90s, I could taste it. I could feel it. I was in radio. I was going to concerts. I was watching X-Men. I was in comic books, like all this fun stuff. And for me, every time I pop on one of those songs, I recognize I'm not that same person anymore, but it pings it. It like lights it up and it lets me see, oh man, I went from there to here. And it kind of lights up the pathway and you go, oh, that was fun. That was a cool little era. It's a nice chunk of nostalgia. And I move on with my life and I go back to listen to instrumental stuff that doesn't mean anything anymore.
You know, it's funny. That's exactly me too. I listen to a lot of my old stuff and then like instrumental stuff. I love, like, I got really into big band renditions of stuff like video game music because of the 8-Bit Big Band, Charlie Rosen, another former guest here.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, we had him on a couple times actually, and I've gone to some of their shows, and I just it's just so different of what I used to listen to, like Eminem. Now I listen to like the Mario Brothers theme song as a salsa. Like,
so yeah, but okay, but so if you think about that though, the designers of the music and the soundtracks for the video games in the 80s, right? The 8-bit soundtracks. And you go back, I would cite Mega Man 2 as one of the single greatest soundtracks that's ever existed in video game history.
Okay.
There's a piano version of the songs now that you can find on Spotify. But watching those composers operate with what were basically like 32 sounds or something. Like, there weren't that many things to play with. And how you could layer them, or how many could play at a certain time, and all these things. They were working with such a limited palette. It's like watching someone paint with only three colors and still manage to paint with all the colors. And when you go back and see those things reimagined with full bands or full orchestras or full, you know, arrangements of instruments, you really can understand, like, oh, they were operating on pure melody. Like, no bells, whistles. We weren't burying this in auto-tune or layers. This was melody and melody alone. And it's that's why those songs were so sticky, like DuckTales, all that 8-bit stuff.
Oh, my God. So you say the soundtrack, I think one of the best video game songs of all time. I told you off, I'm a huge Mario guy, huge Zelda guy, but the moon theme from DuckTales. My God.
There's a piano version of it on Spotify that is one of the most haunting tracks. That's so ridiculous to say that this video game track. I'll find it and send it to you, but it's the moon theme from DuckTales, and it is played on this piano, and it is, I've got it saved in my favorites. It's just this instrumental track, and when it comes on, nothing makes me happier. It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
That's what I appreciate so much about Charlie and the 8-Bit Big Band, is like they take these songs and they just do such an excellent job of putting it together in a way that you're not only getting a new take on it, but you're feeling the nostalgia of the old take. I mean, this dude's obviously good at what he does. He's won multiple Tonys. He's won Grammys. Like, he's good at what he does, but he just does such an excellent job. And I've now gotten to see them live a couple times. He's invited me to a couple shows, and like seeing how it's all done is just, and it's just a show. It's great.
It's interesting when I see bands that rearrange other music, and you realize that, like, on some deep level, they're having to go down and find this common language, right? What was this guy doing with this song? He was basically the equivalent of clanging rocks together, you know, with the instruments he had and playing a, you know, some cat gut string, but managed to get the idea out and make it beautiful and make it match the game. And then 30 years later, someone is taking that and trying to go, okay, well, what were they really doing there? What would this song sound like if it was reimagined completely? The Mega Man 2, and I've always said that if I was ever given the rights to any IP in the world just to do what I wanted to with, I would make a Mega Man movie. Like, that's my... I would do it, and I would do it properly, and there's a band called Dragon Force that is just a hair metal band, and they did a lot of stuff on Guitar Hero. They're like the shreddy one that no one could play at the end. And
Yeah.
That's who would do the soundtrack.
Do the Fire and Flames? Is that the song?
Yeah.
About?
That's them. Yeah. So that's them. That's who would do the soundtrack, and I would have them redo all of the level music, but as a modern metal. It's just my brain swims and all this stuff.
I'm a huge fan of the metal. So again, I feel like I'm shouting out former guests, but we had this guy Family Jewels on, who also, he does like metal versions of like songs and stuff like that, and like I just love that. The melodies from those games are just so—they're
pure,
freaking good. They're so good, and it's like they're the way you can reimagine it to still grab
uncut
you.
Uncut Peruvian melodies, man. They are.
Give me more of it.
There is no baby laxative in these melodies.
I love them so much. I just want to go back to Mega Man really quick and IPs. So, you're a big Star Wars guy. As you could tell by the background, for people watching, he has got Star Wars all over the background. But I believe it was off air, you were saying it may have gone a little too far now.
Oh.
It's crazy what they're doing with IPs these days, is it not? That's why you said a Mega Man movie. I'm like, it's coming, trust me. Just wait.
It's the snake is eating itself. The snake that was eating itself is eating itself. We're on the third or fourth iteration of everything being regurgitated. And I just saw that, you know, there's some good and there's some bad. I enjoy it when I see, it's TBD, but when I see a trailer for something like Beetlejuice 2 and I go, you know what?
Do we need that?
I don't know that we need it, but I also know that if you're going to do it, and you're going to bring back everybody. You're not just redoing it. You're bringing back Michael Keaton and Winona. Like, you're bringing back the important people. And if they're legitimately enrolled in telling a good story and you don't over CGI it and you try to make, there's some possibility there because it's pure. But when you're rebooting stuff like the Neverending Story and you're just digging into every nook and cranny of every, like, we're storytelling creatures as an audience. If you look at some of the best stuff, I read comic books growing up. Comics were a huge part of my life. But one of the things you notice in comics is that you have a role as a reader. You're not watching 30 frames a second. You're watching panels. You're watching snapshots of the story. And then in between the snapshots, your brain has to do some work. When I was watching Star Wars growing up, when I watched the first film, my brain had to do a lot of work. What is the Kessel Run? What's a parsec? What are all these things they're talking about? The Clone Wars? All of these things were just words that would create an image of something in my brain. Never explained, never addressed, just part of the backstory, part of the myth, part of this universe that I'm invited to participate in, to explore. And along the way, you let me do that. 10,000, however many thousands of Bothans died to get these plans. What's a Bothan? What does any of this mean? My imagination as a kid filled in all the blanks. Now they're uprooting everything. They're going back and they're destroying everything I filled in as a kid. Everything, every one of us along the way played with the toys and created the environment and the universe and the interactions. And they're just like, no, your version's no longer real. Here's what happened. And it's made up by people who don't understand the stories and who weren't there when the original myths were created, and they're filling in all the blanks wrong and ugly and weird, trying to make it. And that's where they've gone too far. I don't need backstory on everyone. I need good story and then more of that.
Yeah. Yeah. You can create something new without destroying something old. No, I completely agree. I'm very, the way that IPs, not just Star Wars. So I was a huge Star Wars when I was a kid. And then as they start making a lot of the new ones, I haven't even kept up with everything going on.
Because you can't.
You can't.
Same with Marvel.
It's the same as Marvel, exactly. And so, but IPs as a whole, it just frustrates the living hell out of me how something won't even be green lit unless it already has an audience now. Like, well, there's obviously movies that are coming out that are like kind of traditional, right? Like Oppenheimer was a huge hit based on a book. That's very traditional in movies, right? Mm-hmm. But I feel like to be that summer blockbuster, like Barbie is a great example. After Barbie was successful, they picked up all the Mattel stuff. Like there's like a Rubik's Cube movie coming out and like all these other things. It's like, what is that supposed to be about? Like, what are we doing?
But you gotta remember. So I'll play counter to that on one side. The 80s did this too. I was there for it. It was Saturday morning cartoons. There was a Rubik's Cube cartoon. What the fuck? Like, how? But it was there. You could be a Rubik's Cube for Halloween, and it was a weird little sideways cock cube mask and a, like, they've always tried to capitalize on it, but never before have there been, one, so many outlets for it, right? We're not just three networks and HBO Showtime and the theaters, which is what it was for a very long time. Now, you couldn't even begin to guess how many outlets there are, right? If I go to put distribution out on something, thousands of places for it to go, all looking for content, all needing content. And then you couple that with the fact that the tech to make this stuff has all been democratized, right? You and I can go make a movie that couldn't be made 10 years ago for less than $100,000 or $1 million. Like, that's now at our disposal, even on an iPhone of sorts. So when you give people the ability to pump out content that frequently and you have that many places for it to land, suddenly this is just math on a spreadsheet. What can we get our hands on that is guaranteed to make money? Because the people making those decisions aren't creative people. They're business people. We put $1 million in, we want 10x out minimum, or 100x out minimum. And that doesn't leave room for you to really go, well, what if we created something from scratch? What if we took something we think is a great idea? They go, no, because you haven't tried it yet. We want to take Thundercats, which everyone has proven to love, and then we want to beat it into the ground until everyone hates it. And once it's been wrung dry of every ounce of pennies that could possibly fall out, we'll throw it to the side and we'll move on to something different. But we want the proven thing. And that doesn't leave a lot of room for creative people to fight their way in and make change.
I mean, if we had this 30 years ago, where would Pixar be? You know, like, where would some of these things be? I'm a big animation fan. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big anime person, but I do like Western animation. And I remember the first time I remember thinking all of these thoughts was when Teen Titans Go came out. Because they took a show that was beloved, and they made it into a show that was very opposite of that, but they wanted to just beat it until people... And then they tried it with the Powerpuff Girls, mm-hmm. and they tried it with all these different shows. It wasn't as successful as Teen Titans Go. And I feel like it's doing the same thing with movies. Now, I will say I enjoyed the Mario movie because I enjoyed the world they built, but they also didn't try to do that much, right? Like, no. They didn't try to oversell anything. It was very base level of everything.
You put good, it was a good cast. It was very well acted. Yeah. It was an imaginative world. It was fun. It was nostalgic. Like, they, and that's what I think is about that's where you should stop with an IP.
That's the problem. That's the problem I come in with, is like, they need these IPs that are already, so you're shelling creative people mm-hmm. already, because you need these IPs that are already making money. But then on top of that, you're beating it into the ground until people just hate the product. And it's stuff I love. I don't want to see that happen.
But you're the conflict between the people making the stuff and selling it to us and the people consuming the stuff is, I mean, it's a battlefield. And to a lot of these guys, they just grab what's big and they beat it into the ground. And for us, sitting back and kind of trying to figure out, it's almost impossible to sort through the noise and figure out what's of any quality anymore, unless someone's rubber stamped it as top 10 on Netflix or something else.
Because I don't even think that means as much as it used to, though.
It's not that it means anything, but it's the channel by which a lot of stuff gets into the cultural zeitgeist, right? Like, that's just where it comes from. And they're under the impression that more is more is more is more. They're churning this out. They're shoving it into the water, not because they're interested in, like, I would imagine people in the 80s, I don't even know, I could be making this up, but I would think that people like George Lucas making Star Wars in the 70s and 80s were doing it because they had this world and they wanted to convey it to the world. And then once the world was into it, you spend your time going, well, how can I give them the next installment of that as cool, as well, as best as I possibly can?
I'd agree. I would say the same thing with Spielberg.
Yes, 100%. Especially through the first three indie films. And there was a lot of this in Lucas and Spielberg and everything through the 70s and 80s. Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Like, these were designed to really, really, really tell a story and make you experience something. But now, when the purpose isn't to keep you around as a fan forever of a franchise, the purpose is to get your eyeballs on it right now, this disposable thing. So if we put 100 things out today, that gets 100x eyeballs, and it all gets lost in the shuffle. Even if one of those 100 things is great, it's just swept into the current. And that's what I really wish they would focus on more, is just, man, give me something, give me a great Star Wars film every 2 years, a great one, and not six mediocre series.
This, what you're saying is exactly how I'm feeling, except I don't think it's pushes. I think what happens is they take these IPs because they know, like, if you make a Mario movie, I'm going to go see it. So they know it's going to make that money from the people that are huge fans, and they're just destroying a product to get that out there to make the money off of me, the idiot consumer that will do anything to see any Mario movie ever. And it's saying, I feel like same thing with Star Wars. They're pushing so much Star Wars because they know true diehard Star Wars fans, and Marvel's the same way. We're going to see the film. We're going to see the show. We're going to watch the series. Like, we're going to do it because we love this mm-hmm. product. It is our life. And I feel like sometimes the end is not exactly the same. I think it's like, well, this is going to make us money because we know we're going to get this audience.
Well, you also have to justify monthly subscriptions when you're a company like Disney. All of your output is on a, how do we keep people engaged on the, not as a fan of the property, but as a Disney subscriber. So it really doesn't matter if they're cramming Echo down your throat this week and Hawkeye down your throat this week and Obi-Wan down your throat this week and Tales of the Jedi. As long as there's something always a little bit engaging. And the problem with that is the same problem that everybody on social media has right now. And it's why you're seeing this. Again, it's a noise issue. You're looking at what everyone else is doing. and they're putting out all this content. Oh, we got to have something up all the time, all the time, all the time. Well, you're just emulating that. So you go try to make something all the time, all the time, all the time. It's why you have people who are landscapers videotaping themselves. Like, it's insane to me why does a person who makes chocolate sculptures also have to be a great videographer now in order to sell any chocolate?
That's just the problem with marketing right now.
Well, it is, but I think it's what you see in a lot of film and TV is everybody's emulating everybody, which is just saying more, 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 more. You got to put stuff out or nobody's going to pay attention to you. If we only put something out every 2 years, they'll never see us. But you don't see Christopher Nolan making TikToks in between Oppenheimer and Dunkirk. You know what I mean? He comes out every couple of years, scoops up all your Oscars, and then goes back to his cave where he makes magic that we don't understand. Right? That's James Cameron lives in a submarine in Avatar land, and occasionally he'll just put out 10 films that those people are magicians, but they're the people who I think are making the stuff that excites me, right? You sat back. Nolan is a perfect example for me, who is never doing the same thing, right? Open micer is open micer. That's hysterical. I've never said
that's his next one.
Open micer. Oppenheimer. That's so funny. Oppenheimer is just it's a black and white film. A dude's talking in a room, like nothing happened. It's fascinating, and to go from that. Or to that from ideas like Inception, which is, you know, a deep movie that way, or a movie like Tenet that's its own weird,
A Dark Knight, his spin on comic book movies.
Everything he does is so different because he's out there trying to make great stuff and sate his creativity and his curiosity. And that's just the element I think is missing from it right now. There's a huge outlet for independent artists to put stuff out, but you have to figure out then how to get that seen in enough of a way for it to sort of go viral. And it's a weird machine I don't think we understand yet, but I'm not sure that flooding it with more and more and more stuff is the answer. I forget the numbers, but I think it's like 100,000 songs are added to Spotify every day. I think the numbers are close to they're super high there's a comma in there for the amount of books uploaded to Amazon every day. And with the advent of AI, it's only gotten worse and the quality's gotten worse. So I'm curious to see where all we go from here and what the sorting and filtering process becomes, because that's what it's going to come down to.
Yeah. When you say viral, it brings up, I'm a big Bo Burnham fan, and he was on a interview years ago. This is even before where we are now. He was talking about late night talk shows and how they're always trying to go viral, go viral, go viral. And he's like, I hate when they say that because they have a platform that gets millions of people. You're not going viral. Viral is the guy that has 25 followers that puts out a video and gets 25 million. Yeah. Viral is not the person that has 10 million followers that get 20 million views.
Yeah. Like, you're Jimmy Kimmel's not going there. Viral with these freak your kids out videos. Jimmy Kimmel's posting videos to the world because he hosts the biggest Tonight. You know,
And nobody wants to sit up and watch the whole show anymore. Right. They want to watch it in clips. And that's how it gets so many views. The first late night that I remember really doing this, and it's because it was when I was in college, is when there was Fallon. Fallon would do the games with the guess the lyric or something like that, put it out online, it'd get millions of views. And everyone's like, oh, this Fallon thing's going viral. And that's kind of when I remember this interview coming out, is like him being like, that's not really viral. Like, you already have the audience. Going viral is reaching an audience you've never reached before. But you're reaching the same audience you reach every single week. So how's that viral?
Can't be viral if you're doing it over and over and over. It's just one day.
It's not viral. It's just you reaching your audience. Yes. It's you doing what you're doing. So, you know, speaking of reaching audiences, you have a special coming out next week. So
April 2nd.
Let's talk a little bit about that. How about we promote you a little bit while
there
you're
we go.
Here?
Let's
So you have a special coming out. Signal Noise, right? And it's hilarious. I said so we first met before on this chat before record is when we first met. And I was like, dude, I gotta tell you right now, you're fucking hilarious. You are funny Funny, dude. There.
Thank
there
God. Was one... Wouldn't it suck if I was just like, hey, I want to do everybody's show, and everyone's like, all right, you can do my. And then I sent you like, what if I sent you something like taped on a cell phone in a washateria, and now we were having to talk about that?
Hey, like, listen,
this could be so much worse.
I used to do these very, they were completely funded by me, documentaries called Offstage. It's how I started everything I do. And I used to go for submissions because what it was is it was people that are up and coming kind of promoting themselves. And I used to get people sending me, there was this one I remember, I don't remember the person's name. They sent me this person doing bits on an iPad. It was like on a bathroom sink, and he was just saying, he sent me like 10 3-minute bits on this sink. And like, first of all, comedy is very much playing with the audience as well. Like you could be funny, but like to be really good at what you do, I feel like you have to know your audience, play with your audience, get the reactions, all that stuff to really make you make an impact with the joke. You make even more of an impact with the audience, right?
Yeah.
So if you're not making an impact with the joke and there's no impact of the audience, it gets really tough.
It's hard to watch after that.
Yeah.
Comedy is a weird animal, man. Like I'm changing. This is my opinions changed. You can probably catch me saying the entire opposite of this years ago. But I used to be mad at the level of people flooding the game, right? Like, oh shit, there were just a couple of us at one point, you know, there were enough in the 80s and 90s, there were enough stages to go around. Then the 2000s when I started, you know, and then by the 2010s, oh my God, there's a lot of people. And then the internet and everything that's happened now since the quarantine and all of that has been like, oh my God, there's so many people. And I used to be one of the get off my lawn dudes. Not here. Grown folks, and you go sit at the kid table, but we're going to have the turkey up here and drink the wine. This is where the adults sit. And now I'm like, you know what, man? It's so easy to stand out against that. It's almost better that comedy's become as ubiquitous as it has, that it's on everyone's feeds and everyone's watching it in a certain way. Because when you go do something like this thing that's coming out on the 2nd, we made a film. Like, we intentionally didn't make the same thing everyone's shooting. When you look at comedy specials, and there's everything's got the word special now attached to it. And I come from the era where a special was Raw or Delirious from Eddie Murphy or
HBO
Live.
Or something. Yeah.
Yes. Richard Pryor, a big stage and the light. This was a spectacle, right? That's what it should be. And a lot of people, and nothing, no, not casting aspersions at all, but they're shooting little simple 3-camera shoots inside of low ceiling comedy clubs to about 50 to 100 people. They're decently edited, they're put out, but they're a dime a dozen to a certain extent.
Those used to be called albums.
They did. They really did. That's exactly what they were. You would just, cool, this was a recording of your set at this time, you put it out, but a special should be special. And we made something pretty incredible. There's a little bit of a short film intro that we shot, but Scarface from the Ghetto Boys introduces me. There's music from him. There's music at the end from Candlebox, another 90s band. Kevin Martin, the lead singer, a producer on the film. Like, we really put some creative minds together, and then we built the set is intentional. The size of the room is intentional. We brought in, like, directorially, like where the cameras are and how we shot it and what we did and the focusing on the close-ups, but also making sure you get the scale in the room. Like, there's a lot of stuff that went into this to make sure that, just like we were talking about earlier, it's not something else just like everything else that you're slogging through today. It's designed, man. When you're scrolling through your feed, you will see me. You will know. It's going to be stark red up against all of the grainy black that everybody else is doing. I'm dressed crisp and black and white. It stands out against the red. Like, it's layers of me trying to figure out how to get your attention. And I didn't even know when we first conceptualized this that there was going to be this much competition in the field. Now it's like, I was ready to go up against the dudes making specials like me, legitimately. Hey, here's my best effort, and this is up against all of the guys in my weight class. But suddenly you're like, oh, I get to put the gloves on, and you're going to turn me loose in a football field full of about 600 8-year-olds? Like, this is going to be a bloodbath. That's how it feels right now. Like, occasionally I got to fight a boss, but it's mainly just a bunch of not great stuff. And if you make great stuff, we'll see what happens. I'm fairly confident. It'll show.
You know, you make good stuff, it shows, right? It shows in the numbers, it shows in the following, it shows in all that stuff. It shows in the crowd. You had a good, like, the crowd, it was a full crowd. It was a sold out full crowd. Like, it shows in all that.
What was cool, this is, and this doesn't happen, it never happens. It very rarely does it happen. I got a standing ovation that night on the way to the stage, which is when they announce your name. And if they don't know who you are, it's like any other comedy club. Everybody claps. That particular night, everyone was there to see me. Like, it was a, and you sort of just realize at that point, you're like, okay, that's the end result of a lot of just repetitive work. And not, again, back to what we were talking about, not flooding them over and over every day. This may be a totally false theory. I may find out when I'm said and done that, wow, I should have posted 14 times a day. But the real me knows that I only have a certain amount of stuff of value to give people. I can give you a great special every 2 years. I can deliver that in a series of 50 to 60 clips over the course of a year. I can break that into smaller chunks. I can record a couple of shows along the way of stuff I'm working on that is well shot and well put out. But past that, you know, do you need to hear what I think 14 times a day? Do you need to see me wake up in the morning and jump cut myself making coffee? Do you need to know how I cook a fucking egg? Like, what are people posting this stuff for? And I think it's just all this panicky reaction to the same way Disney's doing it, the same way everybody else is. They're just all, that's what everybody else is doing, so that's what we got to do. And I think if you sit back and just let them panic run, and you just kind of hide in the shade and make something good and give it to people in a proper, I'm not trying to scare you. I'm not trying to trick you. I'm not trying to do anything but say, hey, I made a great comedy special. And if you enjoy it, I'll probably be in a city near you. Let's hang out. Then, you know, maybe it works.
The 14 times a day thing is something you see so much, is because these people aren't, you're trying to reach heights in your profession, right? If you have comedy, the people that are posting 14 times a day are strictly looking for following on social media. Not trying to say they're being social media famous, because obviously famous people do it as well. But the more you post, the more it goes into the algorithm, the more your videos get shown to people, the more people follow you, the more following you have.
Right. But
and
then
that's the big thing with it.
But I haven't figured out exactly where you trade those followers in for a better life. Like, I don't know.
Yeah,
I can't find the counter.
I understand that.
Keep going up with a handful of followers. And like, do y'all take these? They're like, no, those are Confederate dollars. You're like, okay. You go over here. You're like, do y'all take these? They're like, no, those are Zimbabwe dollars. And you're like, no one takes this money. Like, when you ever, at in-app games, right? If you're playing on your phone or something, they never let you trade. They never let you buy what you want. You have to buy in-game currency, and then you have to trade those gems for stars, and then those stars for coins, and then eventually the coins can be spent on what the item you wanted. And it's also, you get a step further and further away from what really matters, that stupid dollar that you had. And that's how I feel with a lot of this, is it's sort of a, yeah, I can post and drum up the followers, but if those people don't really dig what I make as an artist, and they're not going to come buy a ticket, and they're not, I mean, maybe there is a cash in amountable, you know, there's something you can do with social media making money, right? My reels are all, but that's not what I want to do for a living. I don't want to be a guy who has to figure out, if you could be a tree, what kind of tree would you be? And then let me spend an hour turning that into a graphic on Photoshop. And then I post that and I realize, like, I didn't contribute to the world in any way today. I just asked people what they would be. And then I got 84 comments. And then somehow I was able to go ask those people to follow my page. And I'm like, that's what I did with my fucking day?
I think that's the difference. So, like, you are using your platform to do your career of comedy, and the people that are doing what you're doing, that's what they want. They want to be social media famous. Like, yeah, they want people to follow them. They want to get the brand deals. They want to do all that. And the problem with that, though, is there's only less than 1% of people that actually reach that. So, well, like, you have 100% of the people doing it, but less than 1% of the people will actually reach that goal of being social media famous.
If you look at that like a lottery ticket, then it's okay. if you look at it as, I was having a very good friend of mine, Jeff Canada, he's a country music musician down in Texas. And we were chatting about this very thing last night, and he's in the process. It's just, it's burnout when you're doing this all day, every single day.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is, like, the, I was explaining to him that I'm of the belief that it's bullets, not bombs, right? Like, the, I would rather do something quality than just sit there and drum it up and beg people this and that, because everyone is doing exactly that same thing. They want the thing to catch, right? Maybe the thing I posted today about, you know, have you ever been cheated on and how did it make you feel? Maybe that'll be the question that it gets shared 64 billion times and everyone finds my page. And then if you approach it that way, and once a week, right, you make some viral thing and you go, maybe it takes off. And then you spend the rest of your week with your head down working on what's important to you, right? Getting the thing out that's in here. That's what this is about, right? This thing that's clanging around and keeping me up at night. How do I tell this story? How do I make this idea in a way that people can understand? That's what I'm doing. That's what we should be doing if we're artists. And when you're trying to go viral, it's like walking into the gas station. This is what I was telling Jeff. It's like walking into the gas station and buying a lottery ticket. If you do that on Monday on your way to work, and you play those six numbers, in those next 5 days, you have I might just win. It's in the back of your mind, like a little subroutine. Maybe I'll win. Maybe I'll have $1 billion at the end of the week. That's, I think, a decent amount of hope for a dollar. I think that's a pretty good ROI. Even if you never win, that's hope through the week. But if you are buying a ticket every morning, and then you're running back on your lunch break, and then you're faking a smoke break at your job so you can go buy another lottery ticket, and then you're debating in the morning about whether or not your kid's lunch money should be spent on the kid's lunch or a lottery ticket. If that's where you're spending your day every day, then I think the lottery is a terrible, terrible bane on your existence. And that's what I think is important to keep in mind, man. Put out good stuff. Don't be afraid to play the games. Sometimes it's fun to put out something stupid that might go viral, because it could. But if you go viral and the people do find you, then what's there, right? If you haven't put out the good work, if I made something that goes viral, ideally you come to my page and you go, oh shit, this dude has an entire comedy special, but I can spend the next hour watching something made to Netflix standards, absolutely high quality. Wow, he did something. Oh, I'm still interested? Well, there's 35, these videos in this travel series that are all just as professionally produced, and they take you all around the world. Oh, wait, he wrote a book. I can buy it. It's there, finished. But if all I have along the way, if I'm just shoving out every half chapter that I write in the hopes that you might, oh, quick, you need something. I haven't posted anything today. I hope you love me. Oh, I filmed this at an open mic. It's a joke I'm just working on, but let me give it to you in unfinished form, and it's poorly shot. And it's, man, when I do go viral and you show up to my page, I look like everybody else, giving you the same thing everybody else is giving you. And it's all just kind of crap. You lured me into a restaurant for bologna sandwiches, and you did it with an accidental steak. Like, that's not, you cooked a steak on a whim, and that's not what you really sell. Well, now I'm disinterested. I don't want to be that person. That's all.
And this goes all the way full circle back to IPs.
Mm-hmm.
All the way full circle. It's the same thing, right?
It's the same
story. Luring them in with a steak, but feeding them bologna. I understand that. I mean, our social following, when I have some people don't come on, and some people like look at it and they're like, you don't have a lot of followers. It's like, we don't really, that's not really what we're, I want to have a podcast. Like, I get other podcasts. Like, we post just about every day, but it's just stuff from the podcast.
Yeah.
It's just taking a piece of the podcast and promoting ourselves. Like, it's not, the whole goal isn't to become social media famous. It's, I want people to listen. I want to do a podcast. And the whole reason I started this is because I like talking to people. So, like,
you can give people, your job as a good podcast host in a situation like this is to have, I would think, long form conversations with interesting people, and then to take the most valuable parts of that conversation and find a way to give them to your audience so that they know, hey, this is what this is. This is the brand. This is the thing. This is why I come here. It's exactly these things.
And this is what you're going to get if you listen.
Yes.
Right.
And not just are you going to get access. There's a whole long, if you want to listen to all of it, it's there. But here's the short form, and I've condensed it in a way that if the ideas inside of this mean something to you or hit you the same way they hit me, then it's easy to pass this thought on to someone else. And that's and bring them in here for more of it. Like, that really should be the purpose. I'd rather do shows like this that are, you know, it's someone watching is probably more likely to make their way to my special from this than they are to just some other comedy podcast that someone's listening to for a totally different passive reason. So,
yeah,
I think you got to cover all of those squares as an artist, but it's much more about digging deep instead of just trying to give them,
Perfect the art before you promote the art. Perfect the art before you promote the art. That's kind of my fucking art.
We're not artists just because content is not art. There is a huge difference between the two. Art is intentional, and art is somebody's way of saying, I feel this thing, and by making this thing, I want to see if you feel it too. Like, I think that's what all this is at the core. At least in comedy, I have an idea and I go, man, I think that's funny. I think this is a weird, I don't know if anybody's ever looked at these two ideas jammed up against each other this way. I've got to find a way to say that. And that shouldn't be about trickery or how fast the jump cut is or about the font choice or making sure you condense the whole idea to under 60 seconds. Some ideas aren't 60 second ideas like that. And that's what I guess I struggle with is how to put all of this out, right? How to do something long form, which is what I excel at, and how to be competitive in a world that is predominantly sprinters, right? I'm a marathon runner and everyone's sprinting, and I don't think it does me a great service to go in and try to sprint against sprinters. Like, let's go to a longer track and let me show you what my legs can do. And that's the exploration. How do you tell that story in the public eye against the noise of what you're supposed to be doing?
It's always changing anyway. I mean, on TikTok, which if it even exists, and by the end of this conversation, but TikTok now is all about the long form anyway. So it was all you wanted under 60, under 60, under 60. Now they're saying you want 3 to 5 minutes at the minimum. It's so like it's nuts. Always changing. It's always changing. It's always keeping up with it. So you know what? Just do what you're good at, and you know what? If it hits, it hits. That's kind of like that's the same mentality I have.
It's the only thing I know. The only thing I can keep up is what I'm actually excited about and good at. I feel myself push against it every time I sit down to try to edit. When I take a stand-up clip and I go, oh, well, I'll do some clip art of this and some inner, you know, some stuff and some pop-ups, and I'll make it more than just stand-up. And every time I do it, my stomach just turns a little because it's like that's not. That's not what you do. it's not what you do. And that's the rub. I think there's a lot of people out there doing stuff that doesn't make them happy in the name of achieving a certain status or level, at which point they will have to only do more of what doesn't make them happy.
I truly do hope that the TikTok ban holds up, not because I hate TikTok or anything like that, but I would love for some people just to get the reality check because there are some people out there that are going to be in a lot of trouble if TikTok goes away. Just well, a lot of followers. And
it's not just TikTok. It's the if you look at TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube certainly being the most generous as far as pay rates to artists.
Yeah.
But they're all in some capacity paying for content creation. And there's a lot of people making crazy passive incomes through these platforms. But most of them have created product that only exists on these platforms. So
that's what I mean. Yeah.
If any one of them shuts down, it's not just TikTok. If the algorithm changes, if the rules change, if the platform, anything changes, you have suddenly found that you spend an exorbitant amount of money building a house on rented land and you don't get to keep any of it. It's literally your old iTunes. They're not yours anymore. And for people who have put all their effort and energy there and don't have to like this art that we're talking about, right? If you don't have something that you can take and go, well, this, I was just making videos about politics at the moment, those talking heads who are just coming on and saying all this stuff. Well, if a platform shuts you down or cuts off, how do you move all of your videos about the 2016 election over to this platform? Like, you don't have anything. You just have a talking head, and there's plenty of you. So yeah. I think anybody who's focused on how to build something tangible and real and like an actual connection with fans, and maybe that's a newsletter and a mailing list, or maybe that's like moving it to a private Discord, but I think there's some sort of community to be built that's cooler than, you know, 20 million followers here doesn't interest me as much as 20,000 real American fans. Because now I can go to 20 cities in America and I can put 1,000 people in a room. And granted, you probably need more. They're not all going to live in 10 cities. But if your focus is that, right, just to find these markets.
Yeah.
If you're doing that instead of just how can I keep drumming this one number up, then I think your chances in 2, 3, 5 years of actually being here are substantially higher. And that's just a theory, but I'm saying this a quarter of a century into something I've managed to not get kicked out of yet. So maybe.
Signal Noise is coming on Netflix April 2nd.
I wish Netflix. It's on YouTube, but it is. We moved it to YouTube. So we had, here's an interesting, this is a very deliberate decision. We are independently releasing this, not because we did not get offers. We got offers from almost every big comedy distributor out there. The Netflix would have been, I would have said yes to Netflix. But outside of Netflix, which is the one that did not come through, everything else was a no. And it's because I don't want this behind a paywall. I don't want this inaccessible. I don't think that even Max is the right platform for this, even if they were to showcase it. I think you're just the flavor of a week or two. And for me, it's more important that people see what we made than it is for me to figure out how to monetize it right now. I've been doing stand-up for 24 years. I've told jokes in 60 countries, I think, across. It's insane the places I've been and what I've done. And I've captured a lot of it. We have a Whiskey Brothers special we did back in the mid-2000s, 2015. I have 4 albums. Like, I've done stuff, but nothing of this level. And when you do something what I think is my best foot forward, it's just important that you put it out there. And YouTube right now is an incredible place to distribute. And the upside to doing it this way is that I'm not stuck in a place that if this platform disappears or this distributor goes away or this thing goes bunk, I still have the special and I have 100% of it. And I can take it and I can move it to other places and I can pair it with the special I'll put out in a year and a half or 2 years. This is the foundation for something I'm building. And it's just very important to me that it be out in the right way. And that's free and accessible.
Yeah. Make it a building point to launch, make it a launching pad instead of a climbing point, basically. Yeah, I understand
100%.
That completely. That's amazing. So it comes out April 2nd. Definitely check that out. I had the pleasure of watching it. It was hilarious. There was one joke in there. I'm not going to recite it because I, first of all, do it wrong. But you were talking about how we kicked war's ass and you're like, think of like the British. They used to just stand there and get shot. I was actually crying laughing during that joke. It was just so goddamn funny.
That is a fun joke to do because I really lean into the English impression when I do it.
And yeah, you do.
There's a little bit of a lip curl and it's such a fun, the whole show. If you watch the whole special, the first third of it, it's a little fun. I talk about the Horsemen of the Apocalypse and I get into war a little bit. The middle chunk is, you know, super fun too. There's some good stories and I tell some, there's some long jokes in this thing. I think there's some 8 and 9 minute stories. So it's not the setup punch fast pace designed for the TikTok world kind of special. This is something I really want you to sit back and turn on because there's a through line. It's not just a series of jokes in a row. I had something I wanted to say and I tried to say it in this and I hope people watch it, not just in clip form, but you know, beginning to end. Because it's designed to be consumed that way.
It was a whole story. Like, everything connects to one another. Yeah, you talk about the horsemen. You I love the, I'm from Texas. I knew the pandemic was 2 weeks. Like, was fantastic. Fantastic stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, man. I'm so glad you're one of the very, very few people who's gotten to watch it that isn't like in production or film or whatever. You're one of the first screeners. So cool. That's good.
I'm glad. I can tell you right now, and I'm telling the people out there, go watch it because it was very funny. And you can go watch it. You can go watch it on April 2nd right on YouTube. You don't have totally to worry free. About any subscriptions or anything like that. Nothing. Just go watch it. Definitely worth it. It was great having you on. We're gonna have to have you back on. There's so much sure, to talk about. Sure. Like, I don't know how once we didn't talk about Marvel. Like, we didn't one time during this whole damn thing, but we're gonna have to have you back on, talk some Marvel and stuff like that. But it's like, thank you so much for having us, or thank you so much for coming on. Make sure you go check his special. You're gonna love it. Thank you so much, Slade, for joining us. You can go follow him at Sladeham on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and TikTok, Sladeham. Or you can look for Sladeham Comedy on Facebook. You can find him there as well. At Sladeham on YouTube.com. We'll get you to the special. So definitely go there if you're trying to check out the special as well. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We really appreciate you being here. We appreciate you joining us again. We're glad to have been able to bring you another guest. It's been a little while. So having another guest, it's like a breath of fresh air. You know, it really is. Like, you've heard me talk enough, but now we get to actually talk to somebody and we have to discuss a lot of things and get a lot of opinions out there. So that's always fun. That's always great. April 2nd on YouTube. Again, youtube.com/@Sladeham. You're going to find this special. You're going to want to go watch it. I promise you right now, I'm not just saying it because he came on. As you've known from other guests and other podcasts I've been on, I'm not just going to tell you to go do something because someone came on my podcast. All right. Like, I'm telling you right now, this is worth the time. This is worth the time to watch. It was so funny. I actually may even go back and watch it one more time with the screener that I have because it was that funny. So definitely go watch that April 2nd. You're not going to regret it. You're not going to regret missing out on this. So go do that. Thank you again so much for coming on. Hopefully we'll have him back on soon so we could talk about a lot of stuff. When I signed off with him, it was funny because I was just like, man, like, I didn't talk one thing Marvel with you. I didn't talk one thing Marvel with you. And like, I love Marvel. Like, that's my thing. I absolutely love Marvel. We didn't talk about one thing Marvel. So he'll have to come back on soon so we can kind of talk Marvel and some other stuff we missed out on. But great podcast overall. I believe. I don't think that about all my podcasts, but this one I really enjoyed doing. Thank you guys so much again for joining. Thank you for listening. Make sure you follow us on social media at Mad Props Pod on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, or at Schnabel Studios on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, or LinkedIn. If you go to Schnabel Studios, you'll find stuff like Sketching Up or Southern Hospitality as well, which are different podcasts that are under the Schnabel Studios name. We appreciate you being here. We'll see you next week. Thank you so much. This has been Mad Props. Peace out.